My in-studio guest here this morning is John McEwen, co-founder of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. Thank you for coming in today, man. We appreciate it.
This hippie radio, the patchouli oil is just killing me. They got one of these steamers here that just puts out the patchouli oil, so it takes you right back.
We put it in the ventilation system.
Yeah, right? It's like, oh, wow, hey.
You know, you go into the casinos, you hear this, you smell this aroma perfume, yeah. But here it's...
Hey, man, you want to buy a flower?
It's great to have you here. I want to go back and I want to recapture a story that you told on Sunday Night Vinyl that's going to be airing coming up on Sunday night. Before you ever got into this musician thing and band thing and all that, you booked concerts, actually was a producer of concerts. And Bill has to ask you a question. You're going to hear more about this on Sunday Night Vinyl, but I want you to reiterate this for our morning audience just in case. Tell us about the first person that you booked.
Well,
and where?
You got to keep in mind I was 19 years old.
Yeah.
And the guy that ran the club, the Golden Bear, which was one of the essential clubs of the Southern California area, everybody played there. Hendrix, Joplin, Dirt Band, everybody, because they go there out of town. He was doing some concerts in Long Beach. One of them was Bob Dylan, but he needed money. And he came to me and said, hey, can you put up a couple $1,000s? I don't have a couple $1,000s. I'm 19 years old.
Are you kidding? And a banjo player.
I've got $6 to fill my car, so I borrowed $2,000 from my dad because I'd always been good with that. I'd borrowed money from him before for other things.
Sure.
And paid him back. So we hired Bob Dylan for $4,000, and he played the high school, and it sold out. And I wasn't necessarily the promoter. I was involved a little bit.
Yeah.
I was mainly his angel at the time.
Yeah.
And he had to dig really deep to get to me. But, yeah, it sold out. And I remember seeing Bob walk in the I got a front row seat.
Sure. Well, there you
go. I could see the stage door open and him get out of a limo with his guitar and harp rack on, walk out to the microphone, did 75 minutes, and left the room with $5,000. And I thought, this is kind of a fun side of the business.
This is what I want to do. I got to get in that business.
So over the years.
How easy was that, huh?
As things progressed, yeah. I had more access and we had success. I promoted about 300 shows over the years.
Sure.
That's not that many, but it's really fun either side of the box office or the turnstile or whatever you want to call it, the stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun to put Coco Taylor together with Leon Russell and watch what happens to the audience. Or put Dave Mason on in front of, I booked him on a festival I was doing. In the downtown, I said, Dave, I know it's a little funky here, but you're not going to want to leave the stage, and I'll give you a 15 extra. Anyway, he just killed 4,500 people, saw what a rock and roll master could do.
Yeah.
And that's really fun.
Sure it is. Well, we're going to see it coming up Wednesday night because you're going to be here with Journey down at the Send.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I will be at that show, absolutely. Yeah, that's going to be a great show. Let's get to the point where you guys had your first big success on the radio with Mr. Bojangles. Now, on Sunday Night Vinyl, you're going to hear the full version, which in the front of this song is what?
What, Uncle Charlie?
Yes.
You're playing that? Cool.
On Sunday Night Vinyl, we will, because, of course, we're playing the whole album. But
I was born in Kaufman County, Texas.
Where did you find this guy? Is this a real guy? Seriously, I don't know the story.
My brother's wife's uncle was Uncle Charlie. He lived in the San Joaquin Valley, which is by Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
And he played the guitar and had a dog and was an old man that was on the tail end of his life.
Mm-hmm.
But he played the guitar, and he liked to get his dog Teddy out from under the bed to sing. Come on, Teddy, sing. Mm-hmm. Sing the old Rugged Cross.
Yeah.
And what happened was Bill was producing the Uncle Charlie album, which wasn't called that yet, and we were listening to the master ref that night because it was going to go to be finalized the next day, and he goes, wait a minute, get that Uncle Charlie. This is the kind of guy my brother was. Get that Uncle Charlie tape out. It's over. It's on the third shelf. And cue it up, and he's setting up the record player, and he's, let me play Bojangles. He plays it. We play some of Uncle Charlie at the end. We go to the front. Oh, wait, go to the part where you're getting the dog out from under the bed. And so I'm playing the tape, And the dog starts going, and he starts bojangles. He called the engineer right then and said, meet me in the studio at 8 o'clock. We're resequencing and remastering.
I love it. I love it. Here's the end of that. Going into Mr. Bojangles. Check this out. You're going to hear it in its full entirety on Sunday night. Vinyl on Sunday night.
Uncle Charlie, this is recorded 5 years before there was a Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. By the
really?
Way.
Yeah. Really? Check this out. Here's the ending of that here. There it was. There was the dog singing.
I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you.
Hippie Radio 94.5. Mr. Bojangles, of course, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band there. Sounded so good with my in-studio guest, Mr. John McGowan here. Couple of insights on that song, huh?
Would you like some?
I would. Like, this is the, third time you'd ever played mandolin or something like that? What did you say?
This is the second song that I learned on the mandolin.
Second song?
Yeah. And so it kind of pushed me into the mandolin space.
How
for
many
a while.
Instruments do you play, John?
Well, I play on mandolin, fiddle, guitar, banjo, lap slide, dulcimer, a little piano. But I know how to get around on them.
Yeah.
I don't consider myself. Banjo and guitar are the two main things, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we learned that song. We learned it off a scratchy 45 because we'd been rehearsing for Uncle Charlie 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. And Jeff came into rehearsal one day and said, I heard a song on the radio that sounded perfect for me, but I only heard about half of it. Some song about a guy with a dead dog. And Jimmy Evanson goes, I got that in my car, in my record collection. And the trunk of his Dodge Dart, is his record collection, was 145 under the spare tire. It was Jerry Jeff Walker's Mr. Bojangles.
Wow.
Covered with rust and water. And Jeff cleaned it off and took it in the back room and blurned it off the record. Except when he gets to the part on the record, he sings blah, 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 and the smoke ran out. Mm-hmm. We couldn't hear the words good enough. And the actual real words are, he spoke right out.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was the 60s, you know. Well, what's he saying? It must be smoke ran out. Yeah, the smoke ran out. Cool. I wonder how they got that in the jail cell. And Jerry Jeff, when we finally met him a couple of years later, we were worried that that would bother him. He goes, still bought my house.
Wow.
You know, he was happy about it.
Let's talk about the documentary. We've been telling people about this throughout the morning, and of course, we would love to bring this here to Nashville. We're trying
our
best.
I hope that happens.
I do too. I really do too. And if that happens, we will definitely let everybody know exactly when and where and all that. But it's called Free to Rock. It debuted up at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame up in Cleveland, and it's been shown at a couple of places. But let's talk about this. Free to Rock, who produced this?
Jim Brown and Doug Yeager in Stas Naman. Stas Naman is like the Bob Seger or Bruce Springsteen of Russia. He's one of the major rock stars and show producers, and his money goes back way far. His family line goes back way far, so they can't stop him. Like, as far back as Stalin, but not Stalin. I can't remember who is. Oh, you know, it's a deep background.
Yeah.
So they can't hold him back, and he wanted to produce this movie about how American music brought down the Iron Curtain. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the government people didn't like it, but it's taken 8 years. And the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band was the first American group to go to Russia in 1977. For a month, we did 28 shows. They were all sold out, and it wasn't American. It wasn't us. It wasn't Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, because their radio was like farm reports and political stuff. Only one station in each town. And when you bought a radio in Russia, it didn't have a dial to tune the stations. You bought a radio for that frequency in that town.
Wow.
If you moved to another town, you had to buy a different radio.
Talk about control, huh?
That was control.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, well, what if this Russian defects and moves to New York? He's going to go out and buy 150 radios. You know, but that was the way it was.
Yeah.
And it was an American group that did so well that they didn't let another American group in for 10 years.
Wow.
And when they started coming in, the various rock and roll people that are in this film, it really started bringing down the Iron Curtain. And that's what the movie's about.
Yeah. How much involvement did you play in getting this to happen for the Dirt Band to get over there?
I think the involvement of making it happen was from our audience more than anyone. Mm-hmm. We were just dorks running around the country doing what we do, you know. And then when man smoke ran out, you know, all that stuff. And the Russians were out looking for people unknown to us until we were told there's going to be a group of Russians in the audience tonight. They've been to see you 3 times already, but they wanted to make one final look.
Yeah.
And the several groups they went to see, they didn't like. And they looked at a lot of people, you know, and...
How much of a role did our government play in getting you in there?
Very instrumental in making it happen between Voice of America Radio and the agreements to say, we will bring over the Bolshoi Ballet and then the so-and-so quartet and then your folk ensemble, but you have to bring over an American group.
Mm-hmm.
Not a solo star, but a group that makes anarchic type of decisions and, you know, a democratic group. you know, in other words... People made
democracy.
Their own decisions.
Right. Democracy.
And something that represented that.
Yeah.
And then it came to be evident that it was us. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting that
it
happened.
Was. You know, I know you get a little emotional about it, and it's rightly so.
At times, yeah.
Yeah, but tell the audience just so that they can understand
You
fully.
Need to understand that people had things like Bones records in Russia. Music from outside of everything from outside was illegal. It would put you in jail if you had an album that you brought in through the border, a book, an instrument, something from Italy even. You know, you'd be smuggling. Foreign currency was a 3-year jail sentence to be in your possession.
Wow.
If you got caught with pounds or dollars on you, you'd go to jail.
Mm.
And Bones records were where people would go to London or France.
Yeah.
And they'd go get an X-ray film, and they'd take a record, and they'd cut a copy onto the X-ray film and with their chest X-ray or whatever. You know, and then when they went back to Russia, they go, oh, he's nothing but that. Oh, this is just man X-ray. He goes to Paris for X-ray. you know, here, okay, you go through.
Wow.
And then they'd take the X-ray to their house, and people would set up 4 or 5 recording devices, and they could only play it maybe twice.
And that just shows you how far people will go for the artistic value of the music.
Pete Anderson was a friend that I made in Latvia. His succinct story, I'll try and do it. He played American music. He had a group called the Swamp Shakers, hillbilly. He loved country rock.
Mm-hmm.
He was told to quit playing over the years so many times. His mother was threatened to get fired from her job in Moscow, and his uncle was going to lose his apartment. They beat him up after shows. They beat him up again after shows.
Wow.
He had his first baby, and he'd quit playing for a year and a half, and he went out to a club to see musicians that were friends playing, and they convinced him to get up on stage. He ended up playing an hour. The place went nuts because he was really a good performer.
Mm-hmm.
He went to the hospital the next day, and they go, oh, Mr. Anderson, we're very sorry, but your baby died. Well, can I see the body? It was perfectly healthy. There's nothing wrong when it was born yesterday. And we had already disposed of it. And it ruined him for many years. Now, fast forward, things changed. American rock came in, American music. Pete Anderson ends up on a stamp in Latvia as a cultural hero.
Unbelievable.
And he died a few months ago. And he was just a wonderful guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the film talking about, you want to play music, here's what we were up against.
Describe the first night you guys played. What'd you see?
The first night we played, I wanted to stay at the concert hall, very beautiful hall. And I said, no, you go to dinner, just bring me some food. Bring me blah, blah, blah. And when the food showed up backstage, it was a bunch of food wrapped up in newspaper. They'd never heard of takeout food. You know, it was like a steak and a fish and all this stuff. Wrapped in the daily paper. And what we saw was an audience that went nuts for something that they'd never really heard the moment we walked on stage. And I've had Russians tell me over the years, you have no idea how to see the, just to see the American musician on stage was incredible.
Yeah.
We had timeshare tickets happen that I didn't know about. You're up there playing, and a guy gets up and runs out. A minute later, he comes running back in. He's got a different shirt on. And somebody else gets up and runs out and comes back in. It's happening around the room in some of the places. People had bought a 20-minute ticket. The three guys get together.
Wow.
Okay, you watch for 20 minutes, and then you come out, and I go sit in your seat.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And one guy said, for instance, I asked somebody, did you ever see the Bolshoi Ballet? He goes, oh, yes, I see Bolshoi 3 years ago. It was so wonderful. It is so, well, have you gone again? Oh, I'd never get another ticket.
Jeez.
I mean, it was a different world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And what about servicemen coming up and kissing the guitar players? What was that all about?
Well, putting their arms around them, playing air guitar. And that was one of the halls where there was easier access to the stage from the audience. It was a hall, October Revolution Hall in Leningrad, and they could get up on the stage because some of the places were a little more... What was it about was that it was something that was illegal to stand up in a Soviet concert.
Wow.
And people were... We were playing this one show, the bike track in Armenia, 5,000, 6,000 people in the stands. We did five shows there. And the first show, we'd see people... Everybody's looking to the right. Well, we're on stage. They're not looking at us. Oh, then they'd look to the left. It was like the slowest tennis match you'd ever see. And then they'd look to the right. Well, they were looking at somebody standing up that was grooving to the music, you know?
Wow.
And that person would then be made to sit down. And then somebody goes, oh, then somebody else, look, he's standing up. Oh, he's going to jail, maybe.
And, you know, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, and what happened was, by the end of the show, everybody was standing up. And that's just captured in this film, the essence of the freedom of the spirit.
Free to rock. Free to rock. To be looking for it. Hopefully we can get it here. I would love to see that happen. Thank you for those stories. Just absolutely amazing. In your career and the Dirt Band's career, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's career, had Linda Ronstadt around quite a bit, didn't you? Excuse me.
Linda was a friend from the early days of playing the troubadour.
Yeah.
Stone Ponies, different drum.
Right.
And we all wanted her to be successful. We knew she would be, you know. It was very strange. We didn't know. But you didn't know. Again, that nascent press word, nascent thing. Oh, she's really good. But she started making her own records. I was laying on the floor of the studio one night on Ventura Boulevard. And she, I was in the vocal booth just hanging out because she was working on a record. And, you know, you just go hang out at somebody's session. And she comes in, oh, hey, John, I got to do a vocal on this song. I said, oh, I'll leave. She said, no, I'll sing to you. Okay. So she puts on the headphones. I can't hear the track. And she sings, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? And I'm standing, oh, my God. You know, without the music, this is incredible. You know, this should be on the radio. She is really good. Despite the fact that she was really good, because of that, radio just sucked her up, you know?
Yeah.
They put that out, it was a giant hit, and people were coming to see her.
Mm-hmm.
Many people came to see her because they knew she didn't wear underwear. But
okay.
when she did the Johnny Cash specials, remember that?
Yes.
Johnny Cash had her on twice.
Mm-hmm.
The story is that one of the country stars said, Linda, I got you some undies, and you need to wear them on the show. I don't know if she did. I gotta ask her. But
that's,
you know, she just that's just the way it was then.
She ended up on one of a Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's records.
Jeff called her up. We've had it recorded with her several times,
yeah.
and did some benefits in the early 70s where we were the band, and Linda would come out and do a benefit with us to raise money for Indians in New Mexico and stuff. And a good, nice relationship. Jeff played with Linda Ronstadt for 6 months. No, 4 months in a group called the Corvettes.
Mm-hmm.
During a Dirt Band, I Hate Us. I Hate Us. And so here we are in 1979. He calls her up to come sing on An American Dream, a Rodney Crowell song that
Absolutely.
Rodney had sent to us.
Absolutely. And here it is now on Hippie Radio 94.5.